One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and form opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am Michael Eric Owens.
And you would be absolutely tripping if you didn't think DT was in this thing. Hey, speaking of tripping, somebody's missing today.
Yeah. Who? A very central figure to the show. Is
it's not me this time.
Oh no. Yeah, I believe y'all trying to drive me crazy. You know, y'all just I think y'all be like tag teaming or something. Like, you know what? Man, I'm gonna leave next month, man, because I know Mike gonna go crazy again. So why don't you do it the following couple of weeks or something?
No, I don't think for me, I mean, maybe Richard's up to something, but you know, I try to be here as often as I can.
No, you consistent, man. I can't do the show without you.
But you have.
Yeah.
So don't say that, Mike. Don't say that. You have.
Got a little crazy too. But man, hey, did you watch the game? The Warriors and the Thunder.
Baby boy came back home. There was a mixture of applause and boos and hoorahs and get out of here's. You know, it was a lot of mixed emotions in the building. I did watch some of the game. I ended up, I think, fell asleep before it was over with. But, yeah.
You know, I have to be honest, man. I don't, you know, I even posted this. I don't agree with the move that Kevin made, because I think he could have went to, you know, somewhere else. But, I mean, his choice, man. I ain't hating on him. But I respect the man, though. And to see those crazy cupcakes, man. What's with the cupcakes, man? I guess he's soft. I guess a cupcake.
Do you know where that came from?
Uh-uh.
Okay, so we back in the day when we had Kendrick Perkins, right?
Okay.
He called all the soft players cupcakes. You know?
Oh, okay.
You gotta, you know, foul them and they whine and they complain. He's like, oh man, after the game they'd ask him, and I said, man, a bunch of cupcakes, man.
Oh, okay. So that's
now what... now KD has been adopted as into the cupcake family.
Well, his game wasn't soft. I'm just gonna say like that. He had
he put the sprinkles on top.
Yeah, he put yeah. What kind you want? You know what I mean? He served it up, man. But Russell had an awesome game, man. 47 points, and
he had to.
I think he had a triple double, man. It's just that he didn't. You know, he needs more support from the bench, man. But clearly, it just showed when you lose a great player like. I think it would have been the same if Russell had left and went to the Warriors and came back. It might have even been worse, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So, man, I think we can do better. I mean, athletes make their own choices, and I just respect that, man. But I also, on Facebook, I put out a challenge, right? Well, hold on. Before we go to that, let me just talk about next week on the show, man. You know, anybody that Jamie Pettis recommends to us comes with, you know, A++++. And Jamie had recommended that we have on a friend of hers. Her name is Lauren Phillips. She's in Philadelphia. Listens to the show. She's 21. She's a social activist. She's in college. I mean, she studied political science. Man, she goes to Chester University, which is the, you know, Jill Biden is an alumni of Chester University. And she works with students that have, you know, learning obstacles to overcome. She's also worked on the grassroots, man, in social justice and putting together community forums, which is at the, you know, heart of what I do. On critical topics, man. She's an organizer. I mean, just... She sounds amazing.
Can't wait to have her.
Oh, man. Next week, Lauren Phillips, folks, and be on the lookout because we're going to post some more information about her. But, yeah, we love having social conscious people. That's what this show is all about. And we're going to have a great time when Lauren comes on. And I put out this challenge this past week about never saying the newly elected president's name. Simply call him 45.
45.
So we've changed our segment we do on him called 45ing down the road. And so we're going to play this video that I mean, he's done multiple things, right?
45,
I mean,
he, Mike 45, Mike,
right?
40, Mike 45,
the 45th Mike. President. He's done multiple things, but man, we want to play this video, folks, and we're gonna come back. We're gonna have a little talk about it.
Protests erupted in Phoenix, Arizona, as immigration officials deported a woman who had been living in the United States illegally for 21 years. NBC's Gadi Schwartz was in Phoenix last night, but has made his way to Nogales, Mexico tonight, where Guadalupe Garcia de Reyes is now. Gadi, what do you know?
That's right. So last night on this show, we showed you what was happening, unfolding live. There were protests. People were stopping a deportation van from leaving an ICE facility in Phoenix. And inside of that van was Guadalupe Garcia de Reyes. Here you are. You have now been deported here to Mexico. We saw your kids by your side yesterday. They were talking to you through the window. Si nos puedes contar un poquito, can you tell us a little bit about what it was like viendo tus hijos, seeing your kids there a tu lado?
Pues un poco triste, ¿verdad? Porque se quedan ellos allá y yo acá y sin poder darles un abrazo cuando se van a la escuela.
She says that it was very sad. It was very difficult to see her kids there standing next to her, and then she was thinking about how she wasn't going to be able to be there for them, but when she was going to say goodbye and they would be going to school and she wouldn't be able to hug them. Y ya que están aquí todos juntos, how are you guys holding up? How is everybody holding up now that you're together in Mexico for now?
Pues estamos reunidos, estamos un poquito contentos, pero a la misma vez tristes, ¿verdad? Porque sé que ahorita yo estoy aquí, ellos en unos días se tienen que ir para atrás por su escuela.
She says that it's kind of bittersweet because she's able to be here with her kids, but she knows that they're going to have to go back in a few days because of school. And you guys, how are you holding up?
I'm staying pretty strong, you know. It's hard, but we're sticking together as a family. We're being strong. We're here for each other. We're supporting each other.
Gadi, can I ask you?
Since this news has broke, there's been a lot of people that have been talking about this. Some people call your mom a criminal. When you hear that, what goes through your mind?
Well, it makes me like pretty mad and sad at the same time because they don't know her. They don't know anything about her, and they're accusing her of committing a crime. But working isn't a crime. The only thing that she did was work to support me and my brother, and I don't think that that's a crime, and I don't think that they should consider her a criminal because she hasn't done anything wrong.
Got it. And I guess what's your message to everybody in the United States that's seeing this right now?
¿Qué es tu mensaje para todos los que están viendo esto ahorita en los Estados Unidos?
Pues que yo solamente estoy luchando por un futuro mejor para mis hijos. Y que sé que están hablando en contra mía, pero yo simplemente trabajé para mis hijos y seguiré haciéndolo.
She says that she was just trying to work for her children. She was just trying to provide for her children. Gracias por contarnos todo eso. This is just one of the immigration stories, the millions of deported people that are affected every year, whether it be President Barack Obama or President Donald Trump. But this is the face of deportation.
Wow, man.
This is the face of deportation, the guy says at the end, huh? I thought, you know, originally that we were supposed to be going after the bad guys, right? People who are in this country, as Trump put it, as rapists and murderers and, you know, those type of people that should go.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, is working a crime?
Depends on the work.
Depends on how you classify work. But clearly, she's been in the country 21 years.
She's practically common law American.
21 years,
she
man.
She survived, four presidencies?
Yeah, I mean, not, I mean, if they're in 8 years, I mean, but yeah, she survived under several or a couple of administrations, mm-hmm. We can say that. And, yeah, this is what's happening. You know, you hear about, even in Alabama, how produce now, man, is rotting in the fields because workers don't want to come in, man. They're afraid. And we have these raids happening, folks, around our country now. These raids that they are going, stopping people in the streets and making them produce some sort of identification. I mean, this is This is crazy. Man, I you know.
I couldn't even imagine, man, really. You know.
Absolutely.
Being stripped away from your family, just.
Her kids.
Yeah.
Her kids have to come back to the USA because they are citizens. They're in school. Man, it's nothing worse, man, than taking kids away from their mother, their parents. This is what is happening now, folks. And we had a chance. Our show today is about a legend, Harry Belafonte. Oh, we're going to go into this experience that we had with him. It was life changing, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. And so we're going to take a break here. And folks, when we come back, we're going to get deep into the life of this legend. We will be right back.
Join us for the fourth annual Night with Ralph Ellison Gala at the Oklahoma History Center on February 25th, 2017 at 6 p.m. A night filled with dance, music, poetry, and readings from Ellison's works. For more information, visit RalphEllisonFoundation.org or call 405-788-0566. A Night with Ralph Ellison is being sponsored by Oklahoma City Thunder, Oklahoma City University, Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, Audible, Inasmuch Foundation, Fred Jones, Alliance for Economic Development, AT&T, Cox Communication, Center for Economic Development Law, Full Circle Bookstores, Greater Oklahoma City Chamber, Bank First, Tinker Federal Credit Union, and Blacken Studios.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. First of all, man, I want to talk about the invitation and how all of this kind of came to be. And, you know, because I had heard about Mr. Belafonte coming to OU. And I just, you know, I knew it was going to be packed, man. It was a Wednesday night. And I even heard that churches, man, was canceling, you know, midweek. So, you know what I mean? I mean, Harry even went another level over the Lord, you know. I don't know if he feels good about that.
Castle church, but, man, on him.
But I got a call, or I should say a message, said, were you going to hear Mr. Belafonte speak? And I said, well, yeah, I wanted to, but it's probably too late and this, that, and the other thing, man. And the reply to me was, no, I got a couple of VIP tickets for you. I said, oh, wow. I definitely will be there. And so I couldn't help but think of my main man and the experience that you would have, just being in the place. And so just recently, kind of some of your observations about let's first of all talk about when I called you.
Okay.
And
let me go back.
Go back a little bit.
Okay, so when Mike called me, I was doing something not important to be missing this call anyway about Harry Belafonte, but I did, and I called him back. You know, he sent me a message right away, like, you know, hey, hit me back. I got exciting news for you. I'm like, oh, shit, I got to call back. So I called back, and he's telling me, yo, you know, Wednesday night, two tickets, VIP. To the Harry Belafonte speak out. And I'm like, okay, is he taking me? Is he telling me about two tickets he's got for him and somebody else? Now, where are we going with this? So my excitement was there, but I just wasn't spewing it because I didn't know if I was going to be going or not. But, man, you know, after you sent the invite, you know, at that point, I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, you know, what an opportunity mm-hmm. to be able to sit amongst, and don't even get me started on the section we sat in.
No doubt.
But, you know, what an opportunity to be able to sit amongst people who are also going to be, you know, listening to Harry speak. The opportunity to be amongst Harry Belafonte, a living legend, mm-hmm. you know, one of our giants, you know, still living and walking among us.
Yes.
And so, man, I have to say, I appreciated the invite like you said, it was really a life-changing opportunity and experience, because even afterward, you know, I read people's Facebook posts, other people who went, have very positive things to say about their experience there. You know, he spoke on pretty much everything. I mean, he covered everybody.
For an hour and 20 minutes, yeah, man, so at age 90.
He didn't miss anybody. Everybody was included in that conversation, man. And I appreciated the invite and being able to sit down and be there.
And just shout out, man, to Professor Davidson from OU. She is the dean of the African American Studies program.
Very wonderful woman.
Oh man, it was
her attitude is off the chain.
it was great, man. And so I'm always humbled by those sort of experiences. So we want to get deep into Mr. Belafonte's life. So we're gonna try to, but let's just listen to his own words. So folks, and we're gonna listen to what Harry has to say. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk a little bit more.
Harry Belafonte was born in Harlem in the mid-1920s. He's been a pioneering singer and entertainer who was friends with everyone from Marlon Brando to Martin Luther King, Charlie Parker to JFK. Now 85 and with so many of his contemporaries gone, Harry Belafonte has written a compelling memoir charting the extraordinary journey of his epic life.
When you were starting out, born in Harlem to parents who were from Jamaica, poor, who were the pioneers who you could look to think I could be different to the world that's around me?
Well, fortunately for segregation, we were all required, people of color, to live together in the same place. So in Harlem, I saw all the heroes, because Paul Roche and Jackie Robinson, Joe Louis, Jesse Owens, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, we all lived in the same place, the poor and the rich. That's not quite the way today. If it wasn't for television, we'd hardly know one another. I was befriended. Paul Robeson was the first one. Then came Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, one of the greatest intellectuals of the 20th century. And these men stood strong and tall in the terms of dealing with human degradation and human pain. And they did things about it. Then there's a woman named Ellen Roosevelt. And Ellen Roosevelt was the wife of the President of the United States of America. And she threw her lot in with us. And she was constantly in our community. And so with these forces around, I didn't have to go very far to find where resided my models.
You signed up for Second World War, I think, around about age 17. How important and how defining was the Second World War and your time in that for you?
It was perhaps the most defining universal experience that I had. And those of us of color who were engaged in this war were conscripted and seduced into this struggle by the very persons who said they were fighting against this evil. This racist evil. And we said, fine, to the victors go the spoils. And since we were recruited to do this, when we came out of that war, if we were victorious, the generosity of the spoils would be spread so quickly and so generously among all of us who fought that war. Well, that was not the case. When we came back from those wars, segregation in America was more rigid than ever. The colonizing of the world became more intense than ever. Britain's oppression of the peoples of all over Africa and Asia became more intense. And that, for the first time, threw me into a sense of relationships, because I had more in common with the man of color coming from Africa than I had in common with my fellow American who was not of color. I found I shared the struggle of so many others. And therefore, I was obliged to do whatever I could whenever I came upon those in those oppressions, wherever I found them.
Here is one of the great artists of our country and one of the greatest artists of the world. Here is Harry Belafonte.
Ladies and gentlemen, Harry Belafonte.
Mr. Harry Belafonte.
And now, it says here tonight that we're going to have the fabulous Harry Belafonte. Here he comes.
So you're becoming more and more successful. Your albums are selling millions. You're a star of stage and screen. And then when you're touring, say, the Deep South in South Carolina, you accidentally end up in a whites-only urinal.
I was on a bus with the troupe, with the theatrical troupe. We were touring. And we stopped in a place that was a toilet facility that had for whites only. And the other part, in a less, more dilapidated, smelly corner of the space, was for colored. And I did not pay attention to the sign coming from New York. I got off the bus and walked into the white urinal. And as I was about to relieve myself, I heard a voice saying, if you let go a drop, you're a dead nigger. And I thought it was a strange thing to hear, and I thought it was one of my colleagues off the bus being humorous. And I turned and looked, and I saw a state trooper, a police officer from the state force, standing behind me with his hand on his revolver. And he was deadly serious. He was white. And if I violated the law, he was going to let me pay a price. And the humiliation of it, the degradation of it. My urine had better sense than I did because it just backed up. And I struggled with the moment and left without letting go a drop in the urinal. And that indignity fueled my appetite for vengeance in a way that never left me.
Wow. Wow. I mean, first of all, let's talk about his upbringing in New York and Harlem. Mm. When you surround yourself, I mean, this is a message that folks need to really get looking at Harry's life. Mm. When you surround yourself with greatness, you become great. Mm. When you surround yourself with triflingness, you stay trifling.
Message.
I mean, you know, PSA, right? No. I mean, the thing about it is, man, when he was speaking, DT, up there, and he just dropped names like James Baldwin, bam, Paul Robeson, bam, Ruby Dee, bam. I mean, I'm like Langston Hughes. I'm just like,
the way he worded it is just like, you know, I got a call from a young man by the name of Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah,
that's what I knew. Are you kidding me?
Exactly. And I mean, these relationships. Oh, man, you talk about, man, I envy that. I mean, being around people that that are not only intellectual, but socially conscious, and people that are standing on principle, man. I mean, you think about Paul Robeson. I mean, here was this guy that was an actor, a singer, a scholar, had his law degree, graduated from Rutgers. He was a valedictorian of his class back then. And this social activist who was, through the McCarthy years, man, was considered an enemy of the state and had to leave the country. Man, when I think about the knowledge and the, oh, man, what you could glean from Paul Robeson, you know, there's no, it's clear, right, how Harry would turn out with these influences in his life.
You know, he talked about in his speech, you know, them starting off as just voices, you know, people that he heard, and then them evolving into his mentors and then later on into, you know, friends of his. And like you said, there's no way that being able to come in contact with that magnitude of person and of people that he did, that he didn't come out and turn out the way he was. Because, man, you didn't even name W.E.B.
Oh, yeah, Morris. Oh, man, you know.
I mean, he spoke about, I mean,
Eleanor Roosevelt.
JFK, this guy.
JFK.
I mean, the list goes on and on, folks. I mean, but like, to your bigger point about influence and the way that we see ourselves in light of other people we come in contact with is vital to, you know, who we turn out to be, you know, if we're listening in the right ways and amongst the right people to give us that gem or that knowledge of gold that we need to be our full selves.
Man, I'm just tripping for a minute because I'm just visualizing, like when he said we lived around each other. Mm-hmm. I'm visualizing, man, seeing James sitting on his porch. You know, he talked about how Eleanor Roosevelt used to come to Harlem all the time, right, and just be among them. Man, I when he talked about being in that play and how Robeson just showed up to his play and was watching it, man, I mean, I just the influence is for a thirsty, okay, hungry individual for knowledge and for purpose. Man, you could not have a better ingredients for success. And let me just say this to our listeners. I don't care where. You can be on the continent, United Kingdom, United States, South America. You can be wherever you are listening to our show. Let me say this to you. Find great people and befriend them. Be a student, right? We should all be teachers, but at the same time, students, right? Where we are being taught and we are learning at the same time. Man, I was so humble. It made me feel like, man, you don't know nothing. You know what I mean? I was just like, I think I even said that to you, man. I'm like, man, when just listening to his wisdom.
Where was that coming from, Mike?
Man, you know, I can tell you, it's like when I first read John Hope Franklin, when I start getting into his life and all the things that he had accomplished and all the things that he had went through, I just looked at my life, man, and I thought, man, you ain't did nothing, man. You know, I mean, it was just such a humbling experience. And for people that think they have achieved something, have reached some level of status, that had, you know what, that is hubris. I mean, that is pride, man. That has, you know, there is something about living your life in a state of humility, man, understanding that whatever you have, it was given unto you. And if you want to continue to move forward and to prosper and to do something great, guess what? You have to be a student of, I don't care how you get your knowledge, but clearly this man got his knowledge. I was waiting for him to drop Ralph Ellison's name, though.
Would have put the icing on the cake for
would have put the icing on the cake because Ellison was there at that time. You know, all of them, right, was there at that time. And, man, it's just amazing. And then he talked about, you know, this kind of universality, the way that he viewed suffering around the world. I mean, we're so departmentalized on America, America, America. You know, and some of us are only departmentalizing our community, right? This man is looking at the suffering around the world, global, man. Global view. I mean, we are our brothers and sisters' keeper. And before we go to break here, I want to talk just quickly about this bathroom scene.
Okay. Oh, man. You and Matt, I mean,
if you let a drop, man, how humiliating is that? As a man, even as a boy, if you let a drop, I'm gonna blow your head off. That's power, right?
You know, I thought about that and how many times it didn't go smoothly.
Yes.
He spoke about having the wisdom enough to know to, you know, walk away, get out of there. Mm. There's so many others who.
Now I think I would have peed on his boots, bro. Mm-hmm. I just turned around, just wrote my name in his shoes or something. You know what I mean? but I mean, it's crazy, right? You're right. The discipline that it took for him. Like you said, his urine knew better than him.
Right.
They just stopped right. Up or something, you know, just froze in him. Man.
But that's our history, man. We've been subjugated to situations like that where our piss is controlled.
Don't you even pee.
Tell you where to go get a drink from. You
know? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Go in the back and get your food. You can't sit at the counter. You can't come into this establishment. If you're going to watch a movie, you got to sit up in the balcony. Even in the church, we were segregated. So, yes, this is to live through that.
Thank you, God.
Yeah, yeah, this is, yeah, absolutely. If you live through that, then, man, and come out on the other side as loving and passionate as he is, that's a testimony to the strength of his character. Folks, we're going to take a break here. We got more of Harry Belafonte coming up. Stand by. We will be right back.
What's up, guys? I am Leah Marie, owner of The Selfie Gods. Make sure you head over to our website, www.theselfiegods.com, and order your very own selfie moon. If you need that good lighting whenever you out in the club or you out hanging out with your friends and you need some more light for your selfies, that's definitely what you want to get, the selfie moon. Hi, this is Tiffany Hill, host of Authentic Conversations, a weekly motivational podcast where we discuss matters such as self-worth, relationships, parenting, professional development, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. You can find me on Facebook at Authentic Conversations by Tiffany Hill, on social media at @th_authentic, and you can also subscribe to Authentic Conversations on iTunes and Podbean, and the show is also available on blackinstudios.com. I look forward to connecting with you, and remember, to live authentically is the ultimate form of happiness.
Welcome back, folks. Hope you're having some fun. We've got some comments from our online listeners. DT, what are they talking about?
Well, Alyssa's listening to us, as always, and we very much appreciate you, Alyssa. She says that this is a side of his life I was not aware of. It is a great tragedy not to teach while kids in school about how blacks were treated, even celebrities.
That's right on point. I mean, it's... you know, how many?
We think they have some special treatment, right?
And yeah.
You know, and some of them do to some extent. You know, there are people who get on TV and celebrity status and say they've never experienced racism, have never been discriminated against.
Black folks?
Yeah. Mm. And so that's a, I guess, a perception, but.
That's an anomaly.
Yeah.
I mean,
some people do assume that. You know, celebrities.
Stacey Dash.
Living in a bubble, you know, away from all the ills.
Stacey Dash is of the world.
Right.
But no, I mean, you know, these things are not being taught. I mean, black history, as I like to say, is American history. And when it's not infused in the curriculum, you find that these gems that are being taught today are revelations. But I'm so thankful. You know, that that people see value in that. Folks, we're live. You can go to our Patreon, One Mic, One Voice, and let us know, comment on the show. We're talking about Harry Belafonte. And before we get to the other half of that video, what I want to do is just talk a little bit about the war. Okay.
Oh man.
And you know, for black people, I mean, first of all, let's paint the picture. It wasn't good for them before the war, okay? But this idea that somehow if I serve this country.
This is going to be the opportunity.
Right, right. I mean, Alyssa, we're both Navy veterans, right? So we understand what it means to serve. So when you have served your country, this idea that as Harry talked about, the spoils of victory, right, coming back. And defeating fascism and coming back and yeah, I would be treated now, right, as an equal, right? I mean, all that stuff that was happening before, man, we didn't defeat it. That, man, I'm coming back. But did you know Woodrow Wilson wouldn't even allow for black soldiers to march in the victory parade in Paris? Wouldn't allow blacks. Blacks get back here? And they are second-class citizens after have laid their lives on the line, not just to save, not just to protect this country, but to protect all of our allies fighting in that war. Tell me, DT, how does a man or a woman feel when they come back from something like that and they're simply still considered a nigger?
You might have a little bit of PTSD after that, huh? But, you know, something about this man that struck me is, you know, he lived and fought in the World War II. Came back and was in a situation where the promise was not kept, first of all. And he was coming to realize his place in America. And he talked about in several places about after that experience, being more comfortable amongst the African American population,
mm-hmm.
Than seeing himself, yeah. you know, as anything else. You know, he describes it as you know, really seeing a connection to mm-hmm. to Africa and to that part of himself that he didn't yeah. see before. You know, coming back from the war, but. I mean, how would anybody feel,
yeah.
you know, having put their life on the line
yeah.
For something? And, I mean, this is the same fight we're in today, you mm-hmm. know, trying to get acceptance from something that you've invested time and money and everything else into and still not being able to draw back on that investment.
And, you know, DT, you bring up a very good point that I'm going to rub people the wrong way right now.
Right now.
Not now. Right now.
Right now.
Okay. We'll get into vernacular.
Right now.
We got black folks, and I'm not going to say for good reasons, but let me say for logical reasons, that will find themselves being treated like Harry and will shun the white community. I'm just going to be around my folks. I don't like white people. I won't have nothing to do with them. That's the anger, and it's righteous anger. I'm not going to say there's anything wrong with the anger, right? But follow Harry's example, that he didn't generalize it to a whole race of people. He understood that there were some like that, but there were some that was definitely not like that. Speaks about his relationship with Eleanor Roosevelt. Speaks about his relationship with Marlon Brando. He had friends from all walks of life. And we can't take that pain. We can't take that pain. And, folks, I know that pain. I know that pain. I know what it means to have, to have, you know, that sort of oppressor's foot on your neck. I get that. But there's no way that I can take that pain and say all my white brothers and sisters are jacked up. Can't do it. It would be an injustice because I have too many that have opened up doors for me, that have fought battles for me, that got my back and so forth. So that's something that if you're listening and you have that attitude, you need to work on that because this is about trying to bring together. I think Harry Belafonte's message is bringing all people together. That was Ellison's message, bringing all people together regardless of your pigment of your skin.
You just, hey, PSA?
PSA. Put it on a bumper sticker.
And but, I mean, that's a great point, not to be one side. You know, there are a lot of people who are out there to do you bad. I mean,
yeah.
just be honest.
Yeah.
But at the same time, with that perception of generalizing everybody to be in that category, you do yourself a disservice. Mm-hmm. You know, you only see things from a very narrow point of view, and the world is big. You
yeah.
know, there aren't just black and white people in it.
Yeah. yeah.
Contrary to popular yeah. belief, you know. But like you said, being able to see, you know, the good and the folks that are trying to help you, I mean, is the gold in it all. You know, I've also had people mm-hmm. open up doors for me
yeah.
that were not my skin color.
Yeah.
And I know better than to say, you know, all white people are
yeah.
this way, all whatever
yeah.
people are, because I know I've lived through that mm-hmm. and experienced a difference in that. So that's not my reality.
Man, we could go on and on, but we got a video we got to bring up, and we're going to get into the second half.
Hey, oh.
And we want to go home. Be right back.
Working in cinema, one's also struck by the fact that you're constantly trying to sort of battle against, and in television as well, battle against the system. You're not allowed to have relationships with white actresses too explicitly on screen. And then there's one moment, I think, in Island in the Sun, where you try and have a play with that, with the coconut, which I thought was quite a clever way of trying to bring some element of your inner rebellion into the scene.
There was Joan Fontaine, one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood, standing with this new young actor, Harry, and we had this implied intense love relationship, and I never touched her once, and it made the whole thing so unbelievable. So we manufactured these ways in which we could pass off a sense of the deeper desire, and we had this moment where we're standing, because the location was in the Caribbean, and I offered her a coconut, and I just chopped off the top to get to the coconut water. And she drank it. And as she took the coconut away, she licked her lips and looked at where she had drunk her taste. And she passed the coconut to me. And I looked at her, found exactly the same spot in which she had taken her sip, turned the coconut, and placed my tongue first into the opening and sipped my sip. And she and I looked at each other as I did that. For us, that was the creation of our sexuality. Let me just say this in observation. I take pride in the fact that you sit here as a part of the victory of what we did in trying to change the way in which perceptions were about people of color being permitted to have a voice and a vision of doing something other than being subservient.
But your dad was a violent man who beat your mother. You ever seen where your mother is standing outside 97th Street waiting to look for work as a domestic servant? Where does that inner strength to be able to step away and say, actually, no, unless I get to do what I want to do, I'm going to set up my own company. Where does that strength, that dignity come from?
From the very person you just described, from my mother. She pursued work with dignity, although she did a lot of undignified things as a charwoman. She walked away from jobs when she heard racial insults being hurled at her. And I like that. I saw her fire, and I adopted it.
My name is Harry Belafonte. I'm an artist, and I'm not a politician. But like most Americans, I have a great interest in the political and the economic destiny of my country. I'm seated here with Senator Jack Kennedy. As a Negro and as an American, I have many questions, and I'm sure everyone does.
I want to make it very clear, Harry, that on this question of equality of opportunity for all Americans, whether it's in the field of civil rights, better minimum wages, better housing, better working conditions, jobs, I stand for these things.
For us in the movement, justice was the number one goal. We didn't have the Constitution of the America on our side, interpreting our plight in the courts of America. We had no gain. Dr. King, in his counsel to us, said, I understand that these political differences exist, but they are the people who are the protectors of the rights of the nation. And therefore, your task is to find their moral center, because the moral force of our campaign was the supreme force of the debate.
But then moving forward to Barack Obama, you're not sure if he has that. It seems that you don't think that he's particularly got necessarily that moral center, and you say that you suspect that he doesn't have an empathy for the dispossessed, which slightly surprises you.
I don't mean to suggest that Barack Obama is a man without any morality. There is, however, this condition that I believe, that politics without morality is the politics of tyranny. Politics with morality is what moves civilization along to its best conditions. But in dealing with what Lincoln did, for instance, slavery is a travesty, a blight on the human conscience. We have to get rid of it. Roosevelt saying we have to get rid of poverty. Gandhi, these are politics of morality. In that sense, we've hoped that in this 4 years as president, Barack Obama would have expressed and revealed a moral center politically, that by executive power, the stroke of a pen, could make a lot of gain for us, and he's not yet exhibited that.
It's an epic life, and it's an epic story. What are you most proud of?
There's a potent force in being too prideful. It's narcissistic. It's self-anointing. And I'm so busy enjoying the moment that I just get on with it. But what I think I'm blessed with was the fact that the mentors, the things that mentored my life, that influenced my thinking, my philosophy, sometimes they led to each other, because I met Dr. Du Bois through Paul Robeson. Eleanor Roosevelt loved them. And there was this little circle of commonality, social commonality, that made talk to all of them easy. and a nice thing to do. But I feel blessed that I have that, and it's part of what makes me feel a certain pride, if there is such a thing, in what it is that I do.
Harry Belafonte, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Wow, man.
You know what? The thing I like most about Harry, man, is that in his explanation of things, it's like poetry, dude. It's like this man is just like speaking of his heart, you know, and you can hear that. Even when we listened to him live, it was like, you know, after the show was over, you know, people had an opportunity to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess, what do you call this guy, the mediator or moderator. Repeated back what the audience member has said. Mm-hmm. Now he took this deep pause just to, you know, collect it all. And at 89 years old, he also mentioned in 2 weeks he'll be 90. That was fascinating to me, you know, to be able to, you know, based off everything he's lived through, went through, all of that, being able to pinpoint an experience and a way of telling it to people that was in love, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm gonna school you right quick, but there's a message behind this. You know, there's some substance to this.
Yeah.
And at 89 years old, being able to do that and just speak, you know, poetically to me about, you know, the things that he's gone through in his life and what has led him up to this point was absolutely amazing.
Truly, truly amazing. And the brother was smooth too. I mean, let's just be honest. We got any more comments coming through?
Alyssa just pretty much said what I just said. she said it's amazing to listen to him at his age with such wit and sharpness.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it. I mean, dementia is real, you know.
And he ain't got it.
Real. Like, these are things that are struggling with. I mean, to recall the event of yesterday is hard for some people.
Yeah, well, it's hard for me.
You know, so
I'll be honest with you.
And I mean, that's something else we should be looking at. Yeah. You know, keep your mind sharp, man.
He was a reader, man. Mm-hmm. He loved literature, and he was engaged. I think in this work that even we do.
He loved literature and had dyslexia.
Absolutely, he did growing up. Absolutely, even in this work that we have. You have to do your research. You have to be engaged. You have to be a reader. You cannot educate people. You cannot lead people by dumbing them down. We see that happening with 45. But, I mean, he was a smooth brother, too. Let's give him that. I mean, and like you say, in 2 weeks we'll be 90. I call him 90 already. But I like the way he walked with his cane.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, man, this guy is...
You know, somebody I was watching described him as, I mean, at the time he was like 80, just maybe turning 80.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, man, Harry Belafonte is, he's not 80.
Yeah.
He is 4 20-year-olds.
There you go.
One body.
right.
And I think that was a very very smooth way to describe him because, like you said, he's nearly 90. The cat don't look his age at all, you know. Even the way you speak, I mean, that's game.
Yeah,
I mean,
that is. And the reason why we bring this to you today, not just because of the experience that we had, because we're gonna take a break here in just a second, and we're gonna come back and wrap this thing up. Not just because of the experience we had, but these are takeaways from his life, from a life well lived, and that is still going on.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that we can incorporate into our lives today if we're really serious about becoming great ourselves with humility. Folks, we will be right back.
This is Elijah Bailey.
This is Richard Taplin
from the Elijah Bailey Show, bringing you all the content that you could ever desire about anime, manga, comic books, martial arts, fitness, and more.
You can find us at Elijah Bailey Show on the official Facebook page and also Elijah Bailey Show without the W on Twitter and Instagram.
Make sure to follow, subscribe, like, comment, and rate on iTunes and Podbean.
Welcome back, folks.
Yes, sir.
We're going to wind this thing on down. Just a couple of my observations, DT, I wanted to kind of talk with you about, you know, he talked about how we, and I'm going to put ourselves in there and our listeners in there, anyone that's battling on the side of social justice and equality in our country, that we are part of his work or his life the victory that he has accomplished and the civil rights movement accomplished. We are part of that. We are a continuation of that. And I think we need to look at that. No matter what, you could be standing up for something on Facebook. If you're standing up for the rights of others, for social justice, you are part of this movement that Mr. Belafonte was part of, and how it helped to change, and still today we're trying to change the perception of what it means to be black, or how people look at black people. Justice, he said, was number one. Mm. Number one. No justice, no peace. You've heard that. Mm-hmm. We've heard it oftentimes at the rallies, because the Constitution, I would say today, is still not on black folks or minority folks' sides. Man, how many times have we seen the lack of due process happening? How many times have we seen officers get away with the murder of unarmed black teens? Too often. The Constitution is not on our side. But really what sticks out to me, close to the last thing that sticks out to me, is the politics of morality. Mm. Where do we see the politics of morality in our society today?
Everywhere. It's there's a contradiction, because, you know, there's this message that, this is the right way to do things. Mm-hmm. This is the right way to live. This is the right way to love. This is the right way you treat people. This is the right way you go about exercising your freedom to be. But there's also, on the flip side, everything that you see is going against that. Mm. And so it's just like Harry says, you know, these are kind of politics of morality, because they aren't really being done. They're just being said, and from figures that we see as idols, but have not really taken on that life of service and of humility and of morality, really.
Well, we can go back to things like the Great Society, war on poverty. We can go back to these initiatives that I think, although didn't achieve everything, they had resources behind them. And I think you're right. I think the rhetoric that we hear today is about bringing jobs. It's about helping the poor. But when we see programs being cut that's supposed to do that very thing, we understand that it's just nothing more than rhetoric. It's not reality. And there's no longer a demand that government truly puts, I would say, feet to their policies. You see what's happening all around this country now with these town hall meetings. We saw it in Utah, and I think it was in California and other places, where people are showing up at these town halls and they are pissed off because they are tired of the lies that's being told to them. They're afraid of losing their health care. They're afraid of the things that that 45 administration is almost slipped. 45 administration is putting out there. And this idea of his mother standing on principle, leaving her job because of the racism.
Do you remember what she told him at the end? There was a question by an audience member who asked about who was his greatest influence, or how his mom impacted his life. And he said, you know, one day he found her. She was, you know, really disturbed, you know, like something was bothering her. And he asked her, you know, what's wrong? And, you know, she kind of turned to him and said, you know, son, if ever you're out in the world and you see, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm sorry. If ever you're out in the world and you're seeing things going on, injustice, and you do not pause to address it, pretty much tell them you need to pause to address any injustice that you see.
Absolutely.
Just don't carry on about your day like everything is all right, because obviously it's not.
Yeah, injustice anywhere.
And having a mother like that, I mean... Harry had it set out for him.
Yeah, he did, man. You know, his father, of course, was a maniac, but he found models, male models, to educate him, and also to mold him into the man that he was.
Sidney Poitier.
Man, I just can, man, what's the conversation between Robeson and Dr. Du Bois?
You know what I read where Harry kind of quoted him, mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, people know Harry Belafonte, you know, as a singer, as an actor. Mm-hmm. You know, people were asking him, you know, well, how'd you get into this social activism mm-hmm. thing, you know? And he's telling them, like, you know, I was an artist. I wasn't an artist who became an activist. Mm-hmm. You know, I was an activist who became an artist.
Yeah.
That was my platform. Mm-hmm. It's just now that I know what to do with it, mm-hmm. I can use it in the best ways.
Yeah.
I don't just have to be this person, you know, entertaining everybody, you know. I do have some substance. I do have
I do have a mind.
Right, as Ralph Ellison said. I do, in fact, have a mind. You know? Right. And then he quoted Robeson mm-hmm. is saying, you know, artists are the gatekeepers of truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are civilization's radical voice.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, imagine a conversation between two people like that. And he talked about how having these conversations with people who were like-minded made it easier and mm-hmm. a joy to do mm-hmm. because, you know, you're on the same page. It's not like you're talking to some fool who wants you to go rob up the liquor store with him. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. I mean, what do we take away from Mr. Belafonte's life? I mean, first of all, we've given you several things, but we're going to give you a few more. A life that is committed to something, that is committed to something that is bigger than himself.
Definitely was not a yeah. slacktivist.
No, wasn't a slacktivist.
An activist. You know, people are, I mean, today it's kind of, the lines are blurred because mm-hmm. you don't really understand where to find your place, especially online where, you know, you can see something happening, you know, you send out a post about it, you know, you're getting people talking about it, but it cannot stop right there because, I mean, getting the word out is one thing, but being able to do something about it is another. Not only was Harry Belafonte, you know, speaking his truth, but he was acting as well. He bailed Martin Luther King out of jail.
Living his truth.
And in the 1960s.
He practically financed the civil rights movement himself. We got another comment.
Alyssa says, you know, if he has a current book out.
Yes, he
actually
does.
He had the memoir.
Yes, he has. He just got done with his memoir. I will, matter of fact, I'll post it on our Facebook page. For I think folks need to pick that up. I'm gonna pick it up, man, because I want to read about every detail of his life. And what I will say is, furthermore, we take away from his life this commitment, this commitment to principle, as he spoke about his mother who stood on principle. Mm-hmm. Folks, you need to have some principles that you stand on, that you will not be moved from, that you will not capitulate. You need to have some solid principles that define who you are and what you believe. You can't be tossed to and fro by every single idea of or ideology that comes your way. Have a set of principles that you live by, and they should be based upon, again, getting back to this thing, something bigger than you. Okay,
remove the narcissism,
you know,
remove the pride,
absolutely,
remove the ego,
all of that. I mean, and no matter what you do in life, let this be part of it. Let this, you know, he used his celebrity. He used the theater. He used whatever tools he had to further that which he was committed to. That's what this show is about. Okay. That's what, when we get up and we speak somewhere, we give a presentation somewhere, whatever tools we are given, we use that to further our cause, justice for all people, equal rights for all people, due process for all people. We have to be committed to this, man. You know, listen to Harry renew something in me. That's why I said it was a life-changing experience for me, because you can, as a soldier on the battlefield, you can get weary, man. You know, you can get, and you need somebody to speak life into you. You need somebody to say, you know, just breathe some life into you, man, to let you know that, look, The journey may be long, but there's many soldiers along that way. And you just one of them. But you can get to the end. That's what Harry represented to me. You know, I'm not saying my man ready to check out, but what he does represent to me is, man, a life that has made it through, not just barely, but has shined. And, folks, what I will say is, DT, when he said enjoying the moment, we got to enjoy the moments, man. We can't be so far on down the road or paralyzed by the past that we cannot enjoy the moment.
Mike, you might just gave a 5-minute therapy session right there.
That's what it was?
I think so.
I didn't even have a cigar. Normally it happens with a cigar, a grandma, or something like that.
Well done. But like you're saying, you know, it's time enough for us to, you know, quit trying to, you know, pat ourselves on the back and tell ourselves what a good job we're doing. You know, it's time to act, man. It's time to work. Yeah. There's so many more things to be done. So many more people who need you out there speaking that life into them to be giving those pats on the back out instead of to yourself, you know.
But, exactly.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
What can you say? Yeah.
And we had another, anonymous, that says, my favorite thing Harry said about why he stays in America is because this is where the most work is to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did say that.
Yeah, he did.
There's plenty of work to be done here. Plenty of work to be done here. A living legend.
I was there, Mike.
We were there.
I was there, man. We were there.
And folks, if you go to our Patreon account, we talked about it. Matter of fact, we were riding. What should I call it? We were riding in the. I don't even know what to call it, man, because, you know, if I call it the Cadillac or the Mercedes, you know, that don't even speak to it. We were riding, let me just say, in luxury, riding down to Norman, Oklahoma. I got to be a passenger. DT was rolling on dubs. And man, we had a great time. But if you're a Patreon customer, you can look at that content. And folks, we're about to go to the after party. For those of you who are members, you will get this content at the after party. It's been a great show because always, as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time, and what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided peoples? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can be the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. Change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blackened Studios. To learn more about Blackened Studios, please visit them at blackenedstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blackened Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blackened Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.
Will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing that we solve nothing and remain a divided people. Yes.
History. Speak of us.
We can be the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.